Mecum Auctions, the world's largest collector car auction company, returns to Indy with Dana Mecum's 37th Original Spring Classic, May 10th through the 18th at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. 3,000 muscle cars, Corvettes, exotics, and more. Broadcast on Motor Trend TV and streaming live on Max. From avid collectors to those new to the Mecum experience, we welcome everyone. Register to bid now at Mecum.com.
The eclipse has come and gone, and it was worth it. Tony Katz, 93 WIBC. Good morning. It was absolutely worth the hype. The weather was perfect. The view for those of us in Central Indiana was stunning. Stunning. The whole thing. Absolutely spectacular. And people came out from all over the globe, and they came to Central Indiana, and they went to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. By the way, we're like 47 days away from the Indy 500. Doug Bowles joins me right now, president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They held a pretty big party for the eclipse, and people showed up. Doug, good to talk to you. How many people came to the track for the eclipse?
I think we had just slightly over 50,000. We're just trying to get through the bag count from yesterday, but a little over 50,000 people were there. And it was, you know, when we first announced this 6 years ago that we were going to do it, we had no idea. And even, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, we thought, maybe 10 or 15,000 people show up. So in Indiana turned out, as well as 33 different countries represented, as well as every state in the United States represented and are taking customers for that event. Crazy.
So you when did you start realizing, holy cow, people are coming for this party?
Really right after Christmas, as the new year turned, we started realizing it was a bigger deal. But then in the last 10 days, as the forecast for Indiana started to look a lot better than forecasts around the rest of the country related to who was going to see the eclipse, numbers went crazy. We sold 2,600 tickets on Sunday. So it just kind of crazy how quickly people started buying tickets going into the last 10 days.
Talking to Doug Bowles, president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Were they on the infield? Were they in the stands? Where were people situated?
So we put everybody in the infield. So we had a lot of people on our spectator mounds. And then we had the Tower Terrace grandstands open, as well as the Gas Alley grandstands, the ones over the Gas Alley suites. But most of the people really just hung out in the plaza. They brought chairs, they watched a big screen in the plaza, and then at 2:15 we opened the racetrack up, and everybody went out on the racetrack from the front stretch down into turn one, and it was amazing to see the folks standing on the racetrack with their glasses on looking up at the sun. It was really neat moment watching people on the track.
So now this is come and gone, proving once again that the Speedway is a place to hang. 47 days, I'm right? 47 days away from the 108th running?
I was going to say good counting. Yeah, 47 days, which means we're about 2 weeks less than that for when we kick things off with the IndyCar Grand Prix. So it's coming right around the corner pretty quickly.
How are ticket sales going with the 108th?
So ticket sales with the 108th are going stronger than they've ever been. Last year was an amazing year, and you know, we are on the verge of a reserve seat sellout. So we'll see how that goes. If momentum keeps that way, I would not be surprised if we reach that.
And of course, you will hear that race right here on 93 WIBC. Doug Bowles is his name. He's the guy in the suit, in case you want to pick him out of the crowd. IndianapolisMotorSpeedway.com. Not too late. Get your tickets. Make it happen. Doug Bowles, I appreciate you taking the time. More is coming up. I'm Tony Katz.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
The governor's race is getting a lot of attention. We are just a month away from primaries. Primary is May 7th. And it's not the only race we have. You're seeing movement in the 6th district, where Greg Pence decided not to run for re-election. Movement in the 3rd, because Congressman Jim Banks is running for Senate. Oh, that's right. We still have that race to go, which will be a much more interesting race, not in the primary side, but when it comes to a general election. Let's see who the Democrats actually run. Tony Katz, great to be with you. The 8th district has movement, but the 5th district has been the story. The 5th district has been the story because Congresswoman Victoria Spartz said she wasn't running for re-election, then decides to get back in the race. But none of those who had declared left the race. One of those people is Raju Chinthala, C-H-I-N-T-H-A-L-A, Raju, R-A-J-U, RajuForCongress.com. He joins me right now. You have spent time, of course, within the Republican Party circles and with the Hamilton County, working with the Hamilton County Republican Party. This has been something you've looked at before. Why are you running for Congress?
Tony, good morning. How are
Good
you?
Good morning to you.
Good to be with you. And my name is Raju Chinthala. I'm a legal immigrant, speech-language pathologist, businessman, community leader, political advocate, and more importantly, economic advisor for the state of Indiana. For the last 7 years I worked. And I also Hamilton County Republican Party treasurer for the last 7 years. I am dedicated to Republican Party for last 21 years. Not many candidates have done that. I have two master's degrees. One master's is in business administration, and one is in the master's in speech language pathology. I worked in Indiana for last 30 years. I have done many things, including healthcare, business, and economic advisor, that not many candidates can bring it to the table. But when I'm working at the state of Indiana, I travel all over the world, building global relationships for Indiana, bringing $24 billion of investment into Indiana and 100,000 jobs to Indiana. That impacted so much. Why I'm running for, as Tony asked me, I want to give back to this country. The country has given me so much in the last 30 years. I have a mission to develop the district, help the constituent, and make an impact in the state of Indiana as well as in the country. I am committed to defending constitutional rights, protecting the American dream, supporting small businesses, advocating for veterans, which is very important and dear to my heart, and reforming our immigration system. Above all, I'm the only candidate saying and loud and clear, stop stealing from next generations.
So I want to take a moment and go back over something you just said, which was about immigration. You yourself, an immigrant, it is on your website, Raju, R-A-J-U, RajuForCongress.com, under the Issues tab. Here's what you write, and I'm quoting, "I support a secure and controlled immigration system. We must enforce our existing immigration laws, secure our borders, and reform the legal immigration process to ensure national security. I also advocate," this is what you write, "I also advocate for a fair and compassionate approach to addressing the status of undocumented immigrants already in the country while ensuring that the rule of law is upheld." The utilization of the term undocumented immigrants is something we usually hear from the Democratic side of the aisle. That said, what is it that you see as the parts of reform? What is your reform plan? And what does fair and compassionate mean to you?
That's a great question, Tony. I've been in this country for last 30 years. I've been hearing this undocumented since last 27 also years. Nothing has done. Many candidates, every 4 years, they say rhetoric, deport 3 million undocumented immigrants. Every election cycle, we keep hearing the same thing. Nothing happened. I don't talk bullshit. I talk the real issues, real things. I'm a guy who can get the things done. We must do something for them who have been here for 25 years in this country illegally. That is a stigma. That is the way I come. I'm all for shutting the border today. Shut the border. An open border is no border. I'm all for it. Illegal. I'm all for legal immigration. I came as a legal immigrant. It took me 16 years to get my citizenship in this country. I came in 1994 on H-1B visa, and then I applied for my green card, and I moved to Indiana in 1996, and I applied my citizenship. I got my first passport in 2010, and I voted in 2010. So that is a 16-year process. We must protect our border. We must stop illegal immigrants jumping into this country. We don't know who is coming into this country. Terrorists, drugs, so much going on. The national security threat is our southern border. We must stop that. I am a living proof of the American dream that can be achieved through lawful means. The rule of law should be upheld.
One of the things that you also discuss, and remind you, we're on radio talking to Raju Chinthala, a candidate for Congress in the 5th District, R-A-J-U, RajuForCongress.com. In your issues, you mentioned Social Security. And admittedly, not many people discuss Social Security for fear that it is the, as has long been described, the third rail of politics. You discuss committing to protecting Social Security for current and future generations, but we know that the money is not there as it is to do that. What is your plan or your conversation, your thoughts on ensuring a Social Security system lasts for another generation plus?
Yeah, Tonya, that's a very good point, and many people don't want to talk about good things, what it benefits about our community. Many of us are not fortunate to life everybody lives. A lot of people depend on the Social Security because we pay the premium for that, and federal government has created this. And there should be a protection, and it has to be bipartisan. The problem with both the parties and both sides is fighting each other, not getting anything done in the last 24 years, I say. Whether it comes to Social Security, whether it's come to immigration, whether it's come to health care, whether it comes to national budget, it comes to any of those stuff, we keep on arguing either both sides, we go too far from both sides and not anything get things done. And next generations are going to pay the price if we don't fix this in the next 20, 30 years.
But the argument of it needs to be fixed, I agree with. The question is how. Is it your theory that we should increase the retirement age? Is it your theory that we should reduce benefits? Is there something drastic, or do you see something that could be done that's a little more digestible to the American people?
Yeah, I mean, see, the Social Security also, we need to cut down wasteful expenditure across, and there is a fraud in every federal agency that goes on into billions of dollars that needs to be cut down. We need to allocate properly. Depends on how we look at the inflation in the next, I mean, I can't even talk about inflation right now, but it's how we look at it, the next generation. What is that our founding fathers wanted us to do for our next generations to do it? We have to cut down the cost. We have to increase the retirement age, as we are living for longer and longer. My oldest patient was 108 year old when I was working as a speech pathologist. Many of them are living above 100 nowadays. So we must also consider some of the age factor. conditions, and also allocating certain budget that ensures for the next generations.
Raju Chinthala is his name. You can find his website, Raju, R-A-J-U, RajuForCongress.com. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
How bad is it?
Don't sugarcoat it. Give it to me straight.
Want coffee?
I think I need some coffee.
Time to fill up on the news. Tony Katz, 93 WIBC. Good morning. Dow futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 54. That's where we're at right now. I wish I had some fantastic story for you. Nope. Instead, I just got this. You know, nothing big, nothing fancy. This story says economists are increasingly uncertain about Fed rate cuts this year. Yeah, we know. We've been saying it here for months. And I know people are like, oh, you're ridiculous. Of course they're going to cut rates. Yeah, things are getting better. You know there are people out there saying it. This, according to the chief economist over at Mazars. Personally, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw less rate cuts and pushed more towards the end of the year. Really? Funny, not an economist, but I know a guy who said the same damn... Not going to yell. Not worth it. Nope. Just, we are not smarter. I need to remind people of this, although we may be smart people comparatively to other people. But we don't notice these things because we're smarter. We notice these things because we are more willing to accept reality. We see what's happening. We see the world the way it is, not the way we wish it was. And we say there's nothing about this inflation, there's nothing about these jobs reports and the levels of revision that they get that states to us this economy is in a better place, that this inflation is under control, that they've been able to slow down this economy to bring down interest rates. No part of that exists. None. And that's how we're able to look at these situations and say there are going to be no rate cuts coming. Even when the Secretary of Commerce, who is in China, Janet Yellen, is lecturing.
I believe inflation will continue to come down.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just wondering if the economy continues to hold up no matter what happens on the Fed.
I think we've got a good, strong economy. We've got very strong domestic demand. Consumers are holding up. Some low-income consumers are perhaps exhausting their buffers of saving that they built up during the pandemic. We're seeing a little bit more distress at the household level there. But generally, households are in very good financial shape. Our financial system is generally quite strong. Things can always happen. There's always recession risk. Geopolitical developments could create risk to our economy. But I think we've got a good, strong economy that's on a solid track.
You have credit card debt at a high. You have defaults that are growing. It's nice to hear you say anything can happen. Yeah. China's in recession. Europe's in recession. Of course it's possible. You want to keep telling me things are strong. This is the same person who told us that inflation was transitory. You know, it's going to go away so quickly. You're worried about nothing. You believe inflation will continue to come down? That's great. You keep doing that. we will keep our powder dry, we'll keep our cash on hand, and we still won't be able to invest in our businesses or other opportunities because we don't know which way things are going to turn. Meanwhile, the market continues to go up. So don't take investment advice from me. Just recognize that the rate cuts are absolutely not going to come. Tony Katz, 93, WIBC, good morning. It's a really interesting piece over at Free Press, thefp.com. It's about Yuri Berliner. And I can't say that I'm familiar with his work. Tony Katz, 93, WIBC, good morning. Here's the headline. I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. That's interesting. And part of his argument is we in no way, shape, or form at NPR are talking to America. We used to. There was a moment where we did. We don't talk to America. We talk to coastal elites in coastal cities. And we in no way actually look to have an exchange and engaging of an ideas. To quote the piece, an open-minded spirit no longer exists within NPR. And now, predictably, we don't have an audience that reflects America. It's amazing. Who was the professor, Carl, you'll know, producer Carl know, the professor from Evergreen who got fired, Brett, what's his name?
Don't remember.
Ah, look it up. I mean, he engages the same conversations. All he was trying to do was talk, and then, of course, the university set put him down. This is the problem in the university situation where the inmates run the asylum. University students must be told from the beginning that they have a lot to learn and they don't get to dictate policy. This is what makes the University of Chicago and the University of Chicago letter so incredibly important. Where the University of Chicago said, listen carefully and closely. We're a place of free speech. You have a nice day. This was, I mean, it was sent to the students. Welcome and congratulations on your acceptance to the college at the University of Chicago. And it continues on. Once here, you will discover that one of the University of Chicago's defining characteristics is our commitment to freedom of inquiry and expression. This is captured in the university's faculty report on freedom of expression. Members of our community are encouraged to speak, write, listen, challenge, and learn without fear of censorship. Civility and mutual respect are vital to all of us, and freedom of expression does not mean the freedom to harass or threaten others. You will find that we expect members of our community to be engaged in rigorous debate, discussion, and even disagreement. At times, this may challenge you and even cause discomfort. Yeah. And good. Oh, they got chastised for this. How dare they? I mean, how dare they? This is exactly the way it should be. But that's not what universities do. IU has failed and a host of failed. I hear much less about this failure on the campus of Purdue, although it is certainly something that should be watched on all campuses. Right now, IU is doing something kind of amazing. There is a no confidence vote scheduled against President Pamela Whitten on April 16th. What's interesting here is that the no confidence vote is about Pamela Whitten, as this is how it describes it. The petition detailed a number of controversies in the last year, such as the potential severing of the Kinsey Institute, which has long been a conversation, The cancellation of a Palestinian artist's exhibition, the unusual suspension of a tenured professor, and failure to stand against Indiana's legislature. So Kinsey Institute aside, all of these things are you're not being leftist enough. The Palestinian artist who was, I believe, also somebody who was calling for genocide. So there was that issue there, and you can agree or disagree with it. I'm not so much a fan of banning people. The unusual suspension of a tenured professor. That's because a student group wanted to have a meeting, which was a meeting, of course, that pushes the radical ideology of them Jews are the problem, and lied about what the meeting was for to be able to reserve space. It was a violation of the rules within IU. Standing up against Indiana's legislature, you mean the legislature actually believes that free speech and rigorous debate should take place on a university? It's taking their money? You mean my money? Everything that they're pushing her on or saying that there should be a vote of no confidence on President Pamela Whitten is from the most progressive side. When I think the vote of no confidence should happen because the speaker was scheduled to speak at the Hillel there. Right? Jewish, call it a Jewish union, for lack of a better word. And there were so many credible death threats that they had to cancel. And IU didn't say, we're taking the money from the football program and the basketball program and putting in security to make sure that the speaker can be there because nothing matters more to a university. You can live without a football program. You can live without a basketball program, especially this football program and this basketball program. I kid. I don't. But you can't live without free speech on a college campus. That's the way it goes. Pamela Whitten, who wouldn't at first recognize that Hamas is a terrorist organization and it should be called out as such, wanted to do the both sides-ism. No. No one calls for the vote of no confidence for those things. Only the most progressive things. That's unbelievable. And from what I hear, the thought is that it would be very unlikely that the no confidence vote goes through. That said, I don't know what's going to happen. And if President Whitten would like to speak about it, what's going on the campus and why she has made some of the decisions she has made, even including ones I very much disagree with, I'm right here and I'd be more than happy to have the conversation, whether it be the morning show or on Tony Katz today. But you understand that there is a group of students louder and louder every day who think that they're in charge and don't believe in free speech and don't believe others should have a say. They believe it. I am still upset that I have not been invited to the IU campus to speak. I know I'm probably not big enough to cause some kind of kerfuffle, but I'll bring friends. I know some fancy folk. This piece from the FP.com. I'll put it up at TonyKatz.com so you can read it. I'll catch you guys at noon.